Chapter 61. In which a friendly move is originated, the arrangement between Mr. Boffin and his literary man, Mr. Silas Wegg, so far altered with the altered habits of Mr. Boffin's life, as that the Roman Empire usually declined in the morning, and in the eminently aristocratic family mansion, rather than in the evening, as of yore, and in Boffin's power. There were occasions, however, when Mr. Boffin, seeking a brief refuge from the blandishments of fashion, would present himself at the Bower after dark, to anticipate the next sallying forth of Wegg, and would there, on the old settle, pursue the downward fortunes of those enervated and corrupted masters of the world who were by this time on their last legs. If Wegg had been worse paid for his office, or better qualified to discharge it, he would have considered these visits complimentary and agreeable. But, holding the position of a handsomely remunerated humbug, he resented them. This was quite according to rule, for the incompetent servant, by whomsoever employed, is always against his employer. Even those born governors, noble and right honorable creatures, who have been the most imbecile in high places, have uniformly shown themselves the most opposed, sometimes in belying distrust, sometimes in vapid insolence, to their employer. What is in such wise true of the public master and servant, is equally true of the private master and servant all the world over. When Mr. Silas Wegg did at last obtain free access to our house, as he had been wont to call the mansion outside which he had sat shelterless so long, and when he did at last find it in all particulars as different from his mental plans of it as according to the nature of things it well could be, that far-seeing and far-reaching character, by way of asserting himself and making out a case for compensation, affected to fall into a melancholy strain of musing over the mournful past, as if the house and he had had a fallen life together. And this, sir, apostrophe Silas would say to his patron, sadly nodding his head and musing, was once our house. This, sir, is the building from which I have so often seen those great creatures, Miss Elizabeth, Master George, Aunt Jane, and Uncle Parker, whose very names were of his own inventing, pass and repass. And has it come to this, indeed? Ah, dear me, dear me! Apostrophe, so tender were his lamentations, that the kindly Mr. Boffin was quite sorry for him, and almost felt mistrustful, that in buying the house he had done him an irreparable injury. Two or three diplomatic interviews, the result of great subtlety on Mr. Wegg's part, but assuming the mask of careless yielding to a fortuitous combination of circumstances impelling him towards Clerkenwell, had enabled him to complete his bargain with Mr. Venus. Bring me round to the Bower, apostrophe said Silas, when the bargain was closed next Saturday evening, and if a sociable glass of old Jamaica warm should meet your views, I am not the man to begrudge it. Apostrophe, you are aware of my being poor company, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Venus, but be it so. Apostrophe, it being so, here is Saturday evening come, and here is Mr. Venus come, and ringing at the Bower gate. Mr. Wegg opens the gate, descries a sort of brown paper truncheon under Mr. Venus's arm, and remarks, in a dry tone, Oh, I thought perhaps you might have come in a cab. Apostrophe, no, Mr. Wegg, apostrophe replies Venus. I am not above a parcel. Apostrophe, above a parcel. No, apostrophe says Wegg, with some dissatisfaction. But does not openly growl, a certain sort of parcel might be above you. Apostrophe, here is your purchase, Mr. Wegg, apostrophe says Venus, politely handing it over, and I am glad to restore it to the source from whence it flowed. Apostrophe, thank ye, apostrophe says Wegg. Now this affair is concluded, I may mention to you in a friendly way, that I've my doubts whether, if I had consulted a lawyer, you could have kept this article back from me. I only throw it out as a legal point. Apostrophe, do you think so, Mr. Wegg? I bought you an open contract. Apostrophe, you can't buy human flesh and blood in this country, sir. Not alive, you can't, apostrophe says Wegg, shaking his head. Then query, bone, apostrophe, as a legal point, apostrophe, apostrophe, asks Venus, as a legal point, apostrophe, I am not competent to speak upon that, Mr. Wegg, apostrophe, says Venus, reddening, and growing something louder, but upon a point of fact I think myself competent to speak, and as a point of fact I would have seen you, will you allow me to say, further? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I wouldn't say more than further, if I was you, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg suggests, pacifically. Before I'd have given that packet into your hand without being paid my price for it. I don't pretend to know how the point of law may stand, but I'm thoroughly confident upon the point of fact. Apostrophe, as Mr. Venus is irritable, no doubt owing to his disappointment in love, and as it is not the cue of Mr. Wegg to have him out of temper, the latter gentleman soothingly remarks, I only put it as a little case. I only put it apathetically. Apostrophe, then I'd rather, Mr. Wegg, you put it another time, penorthetically. Apostrophe is Mr. Venus's retort, for I tell you candidly I don't like your little cases. Apostrophe, arrived by this time in Mr. Wegg's sitting room, made bright on the chilly evening by gaslight and fire, Mr. Venus softens and compliments him on his abode, profiting by the occasion to remind Wegg that he, Venus, told him he had got into a good thing. Tolerable, apostrophe, Wegg rejoins. But bear in mind, Mr. Venus, that there's no gold without its alloy. Mix for yourself and take a seat in the chimney corner. Will you perform upon a pipe, sir? Apostrophe, I am but an indifferent performer, sir, apostrophe, returns the other, but I'll accompany you with a whiff or two at intervals. Apostrophe, so, Mr. Venus mixes, and Wegg mixes, and Mr. Venus lights and puffs, and Wegg lights and puffs. And there's alloy even in this metal of yours, Mr. Wegg, you was remarking? Apostrophe, apostrophe, mystery, apostrophe, returns Wegg. I don't like it, Mr. Venus. I don't like to have the life knocked out of former inhabitants of this house, in the gloomy dark, and not know who did it. Apostrophe, might you have any suspicions, Mr. Wegg? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, returns that gentleman. I know who profits by it, but I've no suspicions. Apostrophe, having said which, Mr. Wegg smokes and looks at the fire with a most determined expression of charity, as if he had caught that cardinal virtue by the skirts as she felt it her painful duty to depart from him, and held her by main force. Similarly, apostrophe, resumes Wegg, I have observations as I can offer upon certain points and parties, but I make no objections, Mr. Venus. Here's an immense fortune drops from the clouds upon a person that shall be nameless. Here's a weekly allowance, with a certain weight of coals, drops from the clouds upon me. Which of us is the better man? Not the person that shall be nameless. That's an observation of mine, but I don't make it an objection. I take my allowance and my certain weight of coals. He takes his fortune. That's the way it works. Apostrophe, it would be a good thing for me, if I could see things in the calm light you do, Mr. Wegg. Apostrophe, again look here, apostrophe, pursues Silas, with an oratorical flourish of his pipe and his wooden leg. The latter having an undignified tendency to tilt him back in his chair. Here's another observation, Mr. Venus, unaccompanied with an objection. Him that shall be nameless is liable to be talked over. He gets talked over. Him that shall be nameless, having me at his right hand, naturally looking to be promoted higher, and you may perhaps say meriting, to be promoted higher, apostrophe, Mr. Venus murmurs, that he does say so. Apostrophe, him that shall be nameless, under such circumstances passes me by, and puts a talking over stranger above my head. Which of us two is the better man? Which of us two can repeat most poetry? Which of us two has, in the service of him that shall be nameless, tackled the Romans, both civil and military, till he has got as husky as if he'd been weaned, and ever since brought up on sawdust? Not the talking over stranger. Yet the house is as free to him, as if it was his, and he has his room, and is put upon the footing, and draws about 1,000 a year. I am banished to the bower, to be found in it like a piece of furniture whenever wanted. Merit, therefore, don't win. That's the way it works. I observe it, because I can't help observing it, being accustomed to take a powerful sight of notice, but I don't object. Ever here before, Mr. Venus? Not inside the gate, Mr. Wegg. You've been as far as the gate then, Mr. Venus? Yes, Mr. Wegg, and peeped in from curiosity. Did you see anything? Nothing but the dust yard. Mr. Wegg rolls his eyes all round the room, in that ever unsatisfied quest of his, and then rolls his eyes all round Mr. Venus, as if suspicious of his having something about him to be found out. And yet, sir, he pursues, being acquainted with old Mr. Harmon, one would have thought it might have been polite in you to give him a call. And you're naturally of a polite disposition, you are. This last clause as a softening compliment to Mr. Venus. It is true, sir, replies Venus, winking his weak eyes, and running his fingers through his moldy shock of hair, that I was so, before a certain observation soured me. You understand to what I allude, Mr. Wegg? To a certain written statement respecting not wishing to be regarded in a certain light. Since that, all is fled, save gall. Says Mr. Wegg, in a tone of sentimental condolence. Yes, sir, returns Venus, all. The world may deem it harsh, but I'd quite as soon pitch into my best friend as not. Indeed, I'd sooner. Involuntarily making a pass with his wooden leg, to guard himself as Mr. Venus springs up in the emphasis of this unsociable declaration, Mr. Wegg tilts over on his back, chair and all, and is rescued by that harmless misanthrope, in a disjointed state and ruefully rubbing his head. Why, you lost your balance, Mr. Wegg, says Venus, handing him his pipe. And about time to do it, grumbles Silas, when a man's visitors, without a word of notice, conduct themselves with the sudden viciousness of jacks in boxes. Don't come flying out of your chair like that, Mr. Venus. I ask your pardon, Mr. Wegg. I am so soured. Yes, but hang it, says Wegg argumentatively, a well-governed mind can be soured sitting. And as to being regarded in lights, there's bumpy lights as well as bony. In which, again rubbing his head, I object to regard myself. I'll bear it in memory, sir. If you'll be so good. Mr. Wegg slowly subdues his ironical tone and his lingering irritation, and resumes his pipe. We were talking of old Mr. Harmon being a friend of yours. Not a friend, Mr. Wegg. Only known to speak to, and to have a little deal with now and then. A very inquisitive character, Mr. Wegg, regarding what was found in the dust. As inquisitive as secret. You found him secret? Returns Wegg, with a greedy relish. He had always the look of it, and the manner of it. With another roll of his eyes. As to what was found in the dust now. Did you ever hear him mention how he found it, my dear friend? Living on the mysterious premises, one would like to know. For instance, where he found things. Or, for instance, how he set about it. Whether he began at the top of the mounds, or whether he began at the bottom. Whether he prodded. Mr. Wegg's pantomime was skillful and expressive here. Or whether he scooped. Should you say scooped, my dear Mr. Venus? Or should you as a man say prodded? I should say neither, Mr. Wegg. As a fellow man, Mr. Venus mix again why neither? Because I suppose, sir, that what was found in the sorting and sifting. All the mounds are sorted and sifted? Apostrophe, you shall see 'em, and pass your opinion. Mix again. Apostrophe, on each occasion of his saying mix again, Mr. Wegg, with a hop on his wooden leg, hitches his chair a little nearer, more as if he were proposing that himself and Mr. Venus should mix again, than that they should replenish their glasses. Living, as I said before, on the mysterious premises, apostrophe says Wegg when the other has acted on his hospitable entreaty, one likes to know. Would you be inclined to say now as a brother, that he ever hid things in the dust, as well as found them? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg, on the whole I should say he might. Apostrophe, Mr. Wegg claps on his spectacles, and admiringly surveys Mr. Venus from head to foot. As a mortal equally with myself, whose hand I take in mine for the first time this day, having unaccountably overlooked that act so full of boundless confidence binding a fellow creature to a fellow creature, apostrophe says Wegg, holding Mr. Venus's palm out, flat and ready for smiting, and now smiting it, as such and no other, for I scorn all lowlier ties betwixt myself, and the man walking with his face erect that alone I call my twin regarded, and regarding in this trustful bond, what do you think he might have hid? Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is but a supposition, Mr. Wegg. Apostrophe, as a being with his hand upon his heart, apostrophe cries Wegg. And the apostrophe is not the less impressive for the being's hand being actually upon his rum and water. Put your supposition into Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.